Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So, stay with us and together, we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, thoughts on death and immortality. And this is part three. Before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of Lucis Trust, and the Lucis Trust sponsors this show. Alice Bailey also wrote 24 books of esoteric philosophy. And those 24 books are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. The following thought is also from the works of Alice Bailey. Death, if we could but realize it, is one of our most practiced activities. We have died many times and shall die again and again. Just as soon as we know ourselves to be souls, we shall no longer know death. You know, I really don't get it. We've approached this question that I'm going to ask again, so please bear with me. I just have not absorbed the answer. Given the premise that we've died many times, as set forth in the books of Alice Bailey, I would think we'd be experts at knowing all about our past lives, and why don't we retain a memory of those past experiences, those past lives?
That's a good question and a great mystery. Many, many people have wondered the same thing. Why don't we remember? If we're such experts, if we've died so many times and been reborn over and over again, why do we not retain the gist of that experience? I think, judging by the teaching that's given us in the Ageless Wisdom, we do retain the gist of it, the value of it, but not the actual details of it. And I think there are reasons for that that are interesting to consider. We, I think, left off last time with that wonderful statement from the Bhagavad Gita, the Hindu scripture that's so ancient, and that assures us, Krishna assures us, know thou that there never was a time when I, nor thou, nor any of these princes of earth was not, nor shall there ever come a time hereafter when any of us shall cease to be. I love those words because they just ring true to my soul. It isn't a matter of wishful thinking. It just speaks directly to the soul, that assurance. And that, to me, gives me an indication that I do know, I do remember, and I am reassured by that promise that there shall never come a time when any of us shall ever cease to be. That is a matter of conviction. There are other people who would say, well, I am just sure that when I die, that's the end of it. We have to go with what we believe, because there is no documentation of this that we can rely upon. But I think another reason that we don't remember it is that there is a blessed forgetting. Because if we were to remember every detail of our past lives and how we met the end of the physical body each time, for one thing, it would probably be painful. And to review all the ups and downs of past incarnations would be demoralizing, because most of us haven't been saints. And for another, it focuses the mind on the here and now, which I think is where our attention should be, don't you? On the here and now.
Well, yes, and I mean, if we knew all the details of each past life, it would be so overwhelming that we just might not want to continue. But yes, the emphasis should be on today, the lifetime that you're experiencing today. And if you know too much about your past lives, then you tend to dwell on those past lives and in the past, and you tend to be looking backwards all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good.
Like Lot's wife.
Yeah, she turned to crystallized into salt. So
mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, that our lives could become crystallized very quickly if we spend much time looking back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we do retain probably more than we realize some of the experiences that we bring over from the other side, from previous lifetimes, some of the problems that have to be worked out in this lifetime are brought over and to be resolved in this time, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some major problems or attitudes that still need work.
Look at small children. Even when they are very, very young, they have distinctive personalities, distinctive traits and inclinations, aptitudes, mm-hmm. aversions. It's remarkable how children born to the same mother and father, raised in the same family, the same environment, can be so different from each other. And I don't think that's just a matter of genetics or of biology or whatever. I think, and some people might say, well, it's a matter of astrological conditions. I don't know about that either. I think it's the uniqueness of the experience that each one of us is drawing upon in the present lifetime.
Right, and we all come in with a lot of experience behind us, and most of it pretty mundane, but there are karmic liabilities to work out, and relationships that to work out, relationships that we had before, perhaps. That's one of the common things, that we tend to come back into the same family, perhaps, or the same group, the large group relationships that we had with the people that have passed over. We tend to see them again and work with them again. So we don't recognize them perhaps as we worked before, but there is a familiarity there with which draws you together with a particular group, or whether it's a family group or a working group of some kind, or a qualitative group, or an ethnic group for that matter.
There is a wonderful statement that you remind me of in the books of Alice Bailey about our group, which means not only our family, our relatives, and our loved ones, but all the people with whom our lot is cast, which would include our close co-workers, our neighbors, our friends, and if we have them, our so-called enemies. These are all relationships that have something to teach us. Wasn't it the Buddha who said there are no enemies, only teachers? And Alice Bailey said, those who are given to me to love upon the ways of life, I love and serve. Those who are given to me to love. That to me means not only the people that most please my personality, but those who I encounter in my daily life and with whom my fate is cast, even if it's just for a period of a few years in the work I do or whatever. Those people, if we think of them as being given to us to love, are people with whom we have some kind of connection and may very well have a connection from past lifetimes. And until we can learn to love them, we will have something to work out. So to me, there's something kind of creative in that group aspect.
Yes, and it kind of indicates the continuity, not
mm-hmm.
only of life itself, but the continuity from one life to the next, and the continuity of your own experience, but the continuity with the other people that you have worked with in the past.
This idea of continuity in the process of dying over and over again is really fascinating to ponder on. And Alice Bailey, in one of her books, outlines the process of what we retain, what the soul retains, and what it lets go of at the moment immediately following a particular end of an incarnation. She says, particularly if cremation has taken place, that apparently frees the soul from the attachment to the physical etheric body very quickly. And she says, immediately after the death of the body, the soul is aware and alert as to his environment as much as he was when he was living in a body on earth. And she said there is immediately an identifying by the soul of a kind of a life review that isolates three particular seeds, which become, as she calls them, seeds for the future. And everything else, she says, is forgotten and let go of. She says the first thing one does upon death and the relinquishment of the body is to become consciously aware of still being oneself, of still having an identity. Then she says it's followed by a moment of direct soul contact. Apparently, it's a moment that then passes. It's not, for the average person, something that's retained, but there is this encounter with one's higher angel, one's higher self, that is momentary and revealing. She said, for a brief second, the soul responds, and the nature of the response is such that the individual who is in his emotional body sees the experience of the past lifetime spread out like a map, and he records three particular conditioning factors in the life that then become keys to future incarnations. One is the determining of the nature of the physical environment that he will return to when he is reborn. I suppose it has mostly to do with energies and forces more than physical plane material concerns. What do you think?
Well, it's a little hard to say, but the physical environment could be the family life, I suppose, or the nation or the ethnic group that he was associated with.
Don't you think it might have to do also with one's ray energies and one's the centers within one's body, heart, sacral centers, solar plexus?
All of that probably comes into play, you know. Then the second seed is determined by the quality of the etheric body as a vehicle through which all of these ray forces can make contact with the dense physical body. And so these are all determining factors that will help the soul determine when and where the next life is going to be. So it's already planning ahead, you know, even after the moment of death.
And the third seed is the more emotional aspect of relationship, of love, of ties that have bound us to those who were either strongly loved or strongly hated, I suppose, if we have allowed ourselves to feel such things. She said it's this third seed that brings the person again into relationship with those he's previously loved or with whom he had close contact. And that reassures us that the people we have loved, we will return into relationship with in the future, which I think should be a very comforting sense of realization to people.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, thoughts on death and immortality, part 3. And we have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, the title of which is Death, the Great Adventure. Now, Death, the Great Adventure is a compilation of extracts on the spiritual meaning of death from the books of Alice Bailey. Let me give you a quote from this book, just to give you a little idea of what it entails. and I quote, "The present cycle is the end of the age, and the next 200 years will see the abolition of death, as we now understand that great transition, and the establishing of the fact of the soul's existence." Once again, that's a quote from Alice Bailey from the book Death, the Great Adventure. And I must say, that particular book is a spine-tingling book from the point of view of conscious enlightenment. You won't be able to put it down. It's really good. It's available now for $12. You get free shipping and handling if you mention that you heard about the offer on InnerSight. Just a little notation. So what you need to do, if you'd like to take advantage of the offer is to send a check or a money order, $12, to Lucis Publishing Company. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, check or money order, $12. The book that you want is Death, The Great Adventure by Alice Bailey. And you send the $12 check or money order to Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And by the way, we appreciate your donations. You can imagine how expensive being on a great radio station like this, how expensive it must be. And we've been managing to do it, but it gets a little challenging. And those of you who have been listening know we've had other shows, but we just have this one right now, and we need your donations to keep this one going. So send donations. They're tax-deductible, by the way. Donations for the support of this radio show, InnerSight, can be sent to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And by the way, if you need to get in contact with us for any reason whatsoever, a lot of people call because they want a general package of information about the history of Lucis Trust or information about Lucis Trust. It's not a religion. That's one of the most frequent questions asked. So give us a call for any reason. 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Lucis, once again, L-U-C-I-S. That's, think of it this way, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. All of our InnerSight programs can be heard on our website at www.lucistrust.org. On the homepage, you'll find a link to today's program, which will be available for hearing in a day or two. Last week's program is already available, and many of our past programs can also be heard. Once again, www.lucistrust.org. The theme of each week's program is posted in advance on our website so that you can see in advance what next Sunday's program will be. I was thinking about what you and Dale were, Sarah and Dale were saying about how we carry certain values and perceptions over to a next lifetime, and I couldn't help but remember an experience I had in Russia where I saw, and this is several years ago, I'd gone to Russia and I saw these two babies playing, and one had picked up a bowl of gruel and just dumped it over her head, and the little boy just got away from her so quickly instead of experiencing in the pleasure of it. So, I mean, you wonder why kids behave so differently from each other, but that might be an example of what we're talking about too, you know.
Well, I don't know. It's nobody really understands why we develop so independently and so early. But one explanation is that we are not necessarily blank slates when we come into this lifetime. We have a past, a history. We're picking up a thread, each of us, no matter how advanced or unadvanced we might be in terms of the spiritual path. We're picking up a thread and resuming something that was set in motion eons ago. Coming back to this idea of why we don't remember all that, I was thinking that maybe it has to do with the fact that when we are living on Earth in a physical body, our focus, our attention, our will is concentrated for many of us on the physical plane and on material matters, and that we don't really spend very much time thinking about the inner realms of meaning and significance and the subjective purpose behind being alive on Earth. So if we were to cultivate more of that understanding, more of that inner wisdom, then we might gain gradually more of an understanding of what our past has been, why we're in the circumstances we are now, why we have particular lessons in relationships that we're probably repeating over and over again until we get them straight. It's a matter of redirecting the focus.
Right, and I was thinking while you were talking about other ways that we could show up that indicate past experience that we're bringing over. And you see this in the examples of genius or in prodigies, particularly in young musicians that seem to just blossom from the age of two, and they seem to pick up their instruments so quick. And you know that they're coming in with an awful lot of experience behind them, so they're 10 steps ahead of everybody else already because they have gained such much experience in their particular craft in previous lifetimes. And that's why we see so many young prodigies, because it develops very early. And the same with the young geniuses too. These are great talents, or mathematics, or musicians that have brought over this past life experience of in their craft.
What is it exactly that dies? Well, I suppose what dies is the physical element of us, and the spiritual significance of it in terms of what gain it offers to the life of the soul is what we retain. A musician, like you mentioned, who is so talented that he contributes to beauty in the world, that element, that capacity to make music on that level is retained. But the enjoyment of fame and renown as a musician, that's fleeting and passes, because that's concerned with the separated self. So we have to ask ourselves, what part of us dies, what part of us vanishes at the death of this particular incarnation, and what aspect of ourselves will be retained? If we've put all of our attention into amassing a fortune, building a huge wardrobe and a great car and a big house, all of that is material and will go. Mm-hmm. If we have put our attention on developing a talent that contributes to world betterment, even in a small way, if we have put our emphasis on building right relationships and cultivating whatever talents we possess, those things, I suppose, are retained and expanded in the future. So if we're just focused on how unique and special we are as individuals, that's not going to be retained. Because if humanity is one humanity, then everything we've done to stand apart from the one humanity is going to vanish with the death of our particular personality, isn't it?
Yes, and the more you are oriented towards that material personality, the more material things you you think you need, and so to identify yourself with, that's going to make it more difficult to depart when the time comes, because you'll be so oriented and so bound and imprisoned almost by these material forces that it will make death even a little more difficult, because there will be more fear of losing because of the orientation towards the material.
Socrates, who was a very wise man, said, "When death comes near to man, that which is mortal in him is scattered. That which is immortal and incorruptible withdraws intact." So again, the question is, what aspect of my being is mortal and finite? what aspect of my being is immortal. And nobody can tell us what that is. We have to figure it out for ourselves. I think that's another reason why we don't have the assurance of those who have passed on to the other side, much less a memory of our own passing, to help us. We have to discover this, each of us, for ourselves. It's part of the purpose of being human, that we have to work out the values that identify what we are most committed to in life. And if they are values that are immortal, that assures our continuity.
Right, and it's mainly the values that of the qualities of the soul that are so important, because that's who we are essentially, and that's why we're in the world in the first place, to come in, to spread those values, to radiate the quality of the soul. And so the more that we can identify with the soul and the soul qualities and the soul nature, and begin to see our lives from that position, from the position of the soul, then we make ourselves present and more of a presence of the qualities of God, which is what the soul's purpose of being here in the first place is.
That totally transforms our view of death, doesn't it? Because I think too often we think of death as an interruption of what was going along pretty well. Rather, the truth of it is that death is an act of the soul, a choice of the soul made at the right time from the soul's perspective. If we view it in terms of that timing, then it becomes something that we can cooperate with, and for those we love who are dying, that we can release them into what is their soul's next step. We speak of the finality of death, and I think that must be one of the greatest myths of all. Alice Bailey said death is only an interlude in a life of steadily accumulating experience. Only an interlude. It marks a definite transition from one state of consciousness to another, she said. Really, the death of the physical body is the least significant to the soul. It's the transfer of consciousness into the real, and out of the unreal material element, that is most significant.
Well, just my love for popcorn won't carry over, but there'll be other joys.
Yes.
Okay. If you'd like to take advantage of that special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, please do so. The title of the book is Death, the Great Adventure. It's a compilation of extracts on the spiritual meaning of death from the books of Alice Bailey. What you need to do if you'd like to take advantage of this offer is to send a check or a money order, $12, to Lucis Publishing Company, Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.